But if from birth I've been taught that that's what's right, and that if you fight it, you're wrong, how can I do that? I will submit. Because if I don't play my role, we have invented this other concept of the good and bad woman. A woman who is free, who, you know, roams around. You see, all these terms that we use is a bad woman. She is such a good girl, you know, she never roams about, she just stays at home, she helps her mother, she studies. No, these are the virtues of the good woman. Don't talk too much, don't answer back, don't question your elders. What is all this? It is ideology that you are going to become a bad woman and society will stigmatize you. Similarly, we do to boys also in other ways. We use different sets of things. This is a different ideology of how males have to perform their role. So if we have to change this, we have to first work at the level of consciousness. The second level at which we have to work is in getting the oppressed or the marginalized group in the power structure greater access and, more importantly, control over resources. Now, if you look at the last 30 years of development history in India, why the development programs have not really been able to make a sufficient impact on raising the status of women is that they have given women some access to resources but never control. Because control is power, and control tends to always revert back into the hands of the dominant group. So if you have, for instance, a credit program which is designed to give women some capital to start some income generation scheme to become economically independent, what you will find is that invariably loans are given in the women's names, but the husband controls the money once it comes into the house. Or he dictates what activity she can perform with that loan. I can give you hundreds and hundreds of examples of why access, merely access, is not sufficient. You need control and you need decision-making control in order to really enable resources to make a change in your status within the power structure. The third level at which we have to work is at the level of the institutions and structures which justify and perpetuate the dominant power structure. So we have to often create alternative institutions and alternative structural mechanisms which enable women or whichever marginalized group we are working with to have a kind of a base and a support system which is outside this dominant paradigm, to help them gain the strength, collectively join together, gain the strength, gain access, gain some control over resources, challenge the ideology, change their consciousness, and then pow, you're into the power structure and you've begun making changes. Now, let me just briefly go over the actual steps that are followed in such empowerment processes, which I'm happy to tell you are going on right now in our country on a fairly large scale. There are a large number of programs in the non-governmental sector and voluntary organizations which are aiming at empowering women. There are also a number of new programs launched by the Government of India, by the Ministry of Human Resource Development, through the Women and Child Department, Education Department, etc., which also have a stated goal of women's empowerment and raising women's status. Now, if you look at all these programs, both governmental and non-governmental, we find that there are three basic strategies which are visible, or let's call them approaches rather than strategies. The first is the economic empowerment programs. Now, here the basic thrust or the basic philosophy is that in order to change women's position in this dominant power structure, we have to empower them economically. That somehow, until women gain that, financial resources are the root of power in society. So the main attempt in these is to enable women to gain greater control either of the existing income, to strengthen them in their occupations, or to help them gain access to new occupations through skills, vocational programs, etc. And most importantly, to get them access to credit and finance from the formal larger institutions which have never responded to their needs earlier. Primarily because women are considered a very bad credit risk. They are considered high risk group for giving of loans by formal institutions. And the reason they have been considered this is quite naturally because they don't own any assets. As you know, when you apply for a loan, the first thing a bank looks at is what kind of collateral or security you can provide. Now, since women, particularly very poor women, have no such security, and they don't even own the assets which perhaps the family has, the assets will be in the names of the husband or the head of household, they have never been able to gain access to finance from the large institutions. Now, these programs, for instance, Seva in Ahmedabad, Aastha project, Samakhya project in Hyderabad, have basically attempted to do two things. One is to organize women around their occupational group. Seva, for instance, is basically a union. But it's a union of women working in the informal sector or unorganized sector, as you call it. And through their federation, they have tried to get better facilities, for instance, from the Municipal Corporation of Ahmedabad to enable women to vendors to market their goods without being harassed by the police or having to pay hafta, to get them safe places to do their marketing, to get government to sell, for instance, all its raddi, you know, the paper, instead of selling it to various wholesalers, to sell it to the women's union, which then processes it and markets it and so on. Now, some of these projects have been extremely successful. How you measure success in such projects is that they have enhanced women's income, even if it is marginally, but they have enhanced income. They have got women better working conditions. They have been able to give women the support systems required, like creches, access to healthcare. In the case of Seva, they have both health insurance and life insurance for their members. And they have been able to enable women to gain some assets in their own names, which they own themselves. Where they have not succeeded, hardly at all, in fact, is at the level of the consciousness, the ideology level. So you'll still find that people who are in a better off position economically are still in a subordinate position within the family. For instance, the patterns of raising their daughters and sons hasn't changed very much. Because in these projects, the entire emphasis is on income generation and economic activity. So women get very little time to address other issues such as wife beating, alcoholism of the husband, bigamy, extramarital problems, their own problems with their children, or housing or other associated issues. The second approach is what you might call the integrated development approach. Here again, the thrust is not only on economic activities, but also on providing other kinds of resources to women. We saw yesterday, for instance, the long treks women have to undertake to get access to water and fuel and fodder and so on. Integrated development projects use the strategy of providing a whole mix of services to women, preferentially to women, and hope that through that process, they will be able to have not only a better standard of living and a better quality of life, but that some changes in their position will come about. Here again, there have been mixed results. The day-to-day conditions of their existence have improved, but not again the ideological level, the consciousness level. You talk to women in some of these project areas, and I was surprised to find that they would still say things like, but you know, the men should decide, after all, we are only women. You know? So somewhere at the idea level, they have not been able to make much impact. The third approach, which you might call the consciousness raising approach, is extremely successful at the level of the mental change. You find in these projects, such as the Women's Development Project of the Government of Rajasthan and the Mahila Samakhya Project, which is running in 4 states. These are both government projects on very large scales, covering more than 10,000 villages in different states in the country. Here again, you find that women's attitudinal change, their understanding of themselves, their value in society, their role in the family, etc., has changed very radically. But here, because the thrust is so much on that kind of empowerment, that not enough changes have happened in their day-to-day conditions. So we haven't been able, for instance, to provide women on a large scale access to credit, access to water supplies, etc., etc. But what they have been able to do, for instance, the Mahila Samakhya project in Karnataka, in the recent Panchayat Raj elections, in all the villages where Mahila Samakhya is working, not only have all the women's seats for the panchayat been captured by Mahila Sangha women, but even this unreserved seats. In other words, women from the Sanghas, the women's collectives of Mahila Samakhya, stood in open category seats on, say, a scheduled caste ticket or a scheduled tribe ticket or a backward caste ticket, which could have been a man. But the village, in fact, requested them to stand in those seats and they have won. So there you will find that they have accessed this political power by getting into the panchayat system. There's a certain amount of change and penetration into structures, but not sufficiently into the quality of life indicators. Now I'm going to stop here because first of all, I'm very tired. I've been speaking for nearly 50 minutes. And I think all of you are tired, and I think we should now break and get into discussion, and through that process bring out some more issues. Do you have any questions or clarifications on the points I've raised so far?
मानव जीवन एक विशाल शिक्षा संस्थान है, जन्म की पहली चीख से लेकर जीवन की अंतिम सांस तक मानव निरंतर कुछ ना कुछ सीखता चला जाता है. सीखने सिखाने की इसी श्रृंखला में आज मिसेस श्री रत्ता बाटलीवाला हमारे मध्य. हमने जाना कि यद्यपि संविधानिक दृष्टि से लड़का लड़की स्त्री पुरुष को बराबर का अधिकार मिला हुआ है, तथापि सामाजिक आर्थिक दृष्टि से हम देखें अभी भी कहीं ना कहीं असमानता का व्यवहार किया जाता है. यद्यपि हमारी सरकार हमारी शिक्षा ने काफ़ी सुधार किया है, जिसके कारण हम ये पाते हैं कि आज की औरत वो नहीं है जो कभी रसोई में दाल का खाली डिब्बा या टीन का कनस्तर देखकर चिल्लाया करती थी, या अपने ऊपर होने वाले किसी भी अत्याचार को देखकर अपने दुर्भाग्य पर गिड़गिड़ाती थी. आज की औरत पहले से कहीं ज़्यादा बदल चुकी है, लेकिन अभी भी उसके लिए कहीं ना कहीं बहुत कुछ किया जाना बाकी है. आज मिसेस बाटलीवाला ने हमें बहुत कुछ बताया है, तो मुझे पूर्ण विश्वास है कि इस वैचारिक मंथन से अवश्य ही औरतों की स्थिति सुधरेगी. सरकार कुछ करेगी, शिक्षा कुछ करेगी, सभाएं कुछ करेंगी, लेकिन सबसे ज़्यादा प्रेरणा औरत को उसके अपने मन से मिलेगी. जब तक औरत अपने सुधार के लिए स्वयं आगे नहीं आती, दूसरे का रास्ता नहीं रोकती, तब तक उसे अपना अधिकार कदापि नहीं मिलेगा. मैं मिसेस बाटलीवाला का अपनी ओर से और अपने पूरे साथियों की ओर से इस न्यास प्रांगण में पधारने पर जहां हार्दिक अभिनंदन करती हूं, वहां धन्यवाद भी करती हूं कि उन्होंने औरतों संबंधी इस बहुत ही महत्वपूर्ण विषय पर हमें विस्तृत जानकारी की, हमें लाभान्वित किया. एक बार आपका धन्यवाद.